Now on Mitchell's Front Page, Talking Freely with Stephanie Asher.
Good morning, Steph. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Mitchell. And you?
I'm very well indeed. What a nice morning it is this morning. Blue skies, summer continues.
Beautiful autumn weather's lovely, isn't it?
It is indeed. Now, there's so much to talk about, but the big deal is, of course, still the federal election campaign. I don't know if you have any observations about that before we jump into a couple of these issues.
Nothing other than I think everybody's getting tired of it already.
Yeah, that's probably right. But the superannuation, as I was saying earlier, is quite interesting because I think the government thought that they could potentially get away with some of these changes that people weren't going to worry about it. But I've been listening to a couple of radio stations that do the talkback in both Sydney and Melbourne, and the government's getting whacked from pillar to post on those radio stations, which tend to have the older demographic listening that's interested in super.
Yeah, that's right. And apparently the talkback radio market's typically the conservative market, so that's interesting too, that it's the backlash is coming from the people who are introducing the policy. And look, broadly speaking, what you said earlier about Gen Y being worried that they may not end up getting their super, I think that's not restricted to Gen Y. I know I've certainly felt that for at least 5 to 10 years of my accountant telling me put more in super and me saying yes, but I can't guarantee that they're not going to change rules around it. And if I can't have control over my money in the future, then I'm not really interested. So we tended to put our money in property instead. Mm. But specifically with the proposed Liberal policy, the retrospective to July 2007 piece essentially is capping a lifetime investment is $500,000 per person. And what I've been fascinated to read is different case studies. There was one in the Sunday Age yesterday about a fellow in Brighton, and they've obviously made some really good choices as a family. They bought a 5-bedroom house many years ago, I think in the 70s in Brighton, and considered that that was going to be the nest egg. And he's saying, look, you know, I've worked as an accountant, an average accountant for 25 years on wages. I've made the decision this was going to be our nest egg. We're going to sell this and we're going to move, you know, downsize and move to a smaller property. And he's obviously then going to be penalised to some degree with the new policy. And he actually said, I'm not in the top 4%. I'm not very rich. And I actually thought it made me laugh out loud. I thought, well, you are. Frankly, you are. And these are people who are really complaining about being taxed at a 15% rate over $500,000. So I look at it and take a broad brush and just think it's pretty much a first world problem, isn't it?
Well, that's probably a fair point, but it is interesting when you look at the distribution of income in Australia, and as soon as you go over about that $100,000 a year mark, the number of people getting that amount of income just tapers off very, very quickly.
That's right, yeah, and the average amount of super, I think, is more in the 80,000 mark for women and 120 or so for men. So the people who are really complaining about it being capped at 1.6 million, and that's not capping how much money they have. This is how much money they can put tax-free into super, and then anything over and above that is at 15%. So really, yeah, I think that we need to look at it. And of course, people do have the right to profit and benefit from the work that they've done and the money that they've made, etc., etc. But I think it's a little bit of cry me a river, really.
Well, as I was saying before 10 o'clock, my position is obviously I'm 24 years old, so it's probably going to be at least 46 years plus before you can even access your super. Mm. Obviously, with the aging population, we're probably not going to be able to retire until we're about 80 years old or something like that. Do you just wonder, like, how many successive governments are there going to be over that time?
That's
of
right.
All political persuasions, and how are they going to deal with super and touch it? I was reading something about it in the newspaper last week, and they used an analogy of where you're putting your money into a vault or something, but you're trusting the government, and they've got the key to it, and you can never trust the thief with the key.
That's thief, that's harsh. But yeah, absolutely. And look, the barefoot investor who writes for the Herald Sun, and I think he's great with his financial advice, he made the comment to somebody who'd asked a question. He said, look, to be honest though, super laws these days are about as reliable as a Donald Trump election promise. You get the feeling that eventually whoever ends up in charge will build a giant wall around super and tax the hell out of it. And I sort of thought, touche, that's pretty much it. With an ageing population, that's what's going to happen.
That's exactly right. And it's a shame. shame because, in theory, shouldn't we be encouraging people to be self-sustaining for their retirement?
That's right. I think we're in the mode at the moment and in the generation where it almost feels like a sucker punch. They've really encouraged everybody to put their money there, and then they've turned around and said, well, now we're going to only let it out again as we see fit. And if you didn't see that coming and you trusted blindly that they were going to be able to maintain the freedom that we've always had, then perhaps you would feel a little ripped off.
And what about this retrospective nature of this? I mean, some of these changes they're saying affect you if you've put in money since 2007. So over 9 to 10 years, you've put money in under one premise and now they've suddenly changed the rules of the game.
Yeah, I think that's probably a position that might end up being massaged out if this policy does tend to go through. But, yeah, they were talking this morning about it's divorcees that are going to suffer as well, because in some cases someone in a divorce situation will have taken the house and someone else will have taken the super, so the person who's taken the super is effectively the one who's punished.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's lots of different things that need to be ironed out.
Now, I was reading about that in the Sydney Morning Herald. So there's a lot of problems, and the government's perhaps been a bit too quick with this policy.
Possibly.
Even though they've been very slow on everything else.
Yeah, it's a good conversation to have, though. I think, you know, we do need to come up. I think with most of the strategy that what I'm seeing is that it's raising good conversations about things that need to be dealt with. You know, how are we going to fund our future in an ageing population? So that's the conversation that's being had. And we're only going to hear probably in the media about the specifics and the people who are bleating about it, obviously. But I think the actual conversation is a really healthy one to have.
Well, this was the whole thing with the intergenerational report, but that got roundly condemned, so people just weren't willing to listen.
That's right, or to read such a big document.
That's right. But you had Karl Krusinski doing those ads with it, and he then said, well, actually, I didn't realise that it was so political, and I didn't realise that I was doing it for the government, and just stuff like that. So the whole thing almost became discredited in a way.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. And a couple of other points. Well, first of all, in the IPA, they're a right-wing think tank, and they've said they're going to war on this super issue. They're going to fight and fight and fight. So that's one thing where the government's almost really hurting its core constituency. And the other thing is that when Labor was in power, this was before the 2013 election, I seem to recall that in the haste to try and turn that surplus in 2013 like they'd promised, Labor were proposing a range of different changes to the super system. And the opposition at the time, now the government, really whacked them from pillar to post about it. So a little bit of hypocrisy there potentially.
Yeah, that's right. And it's obviously a topic that's always going to generate conversation and have it early in the election process, I guess.
That's it. Now, what about Mandy Squire's piece in the paper on Saturday? This was about, I think it was entitled, I'm Geelong and I Have a Problem.
Yes. No, I thought it was a terrific article. And you talked earlier about what the central contention of the article was. And for me, it was all about being honest and finding out where we really are as a town and as a community. And I've been saying this for years in terms of the strategic planning and the reputation. We need to have a clear idea of where we currently stand. And from a brand and reputation perspective, we need to ask the right questions and of the right people, not just be quite navel-gazing and insular, which we tend to do here. We also need to know that from an economic and social planning and in employment perspective, where are we at? What are the opportunities? What are the jobs? There's a lot of talk, but not much actual rubber on the road with it all. And also from a future land planning and environmental sustainability perspective, I think we're a perfect region to be a sustainability across all three bottom lines, a sustainability audit-worthy subject. So I think, you know, that's the basis of any strategic planning, know where you're at. So be honest and be brutally honest. That's all very clearly articulated in Good to Great, which everybody in Geelong claims to have read. And I think that was Mandy's point. We need to actually understand exactly what our issues are. The comments online I thought were quite interesting. I don't read any towards myself anymore because these people are very contrary. They seem to just take whatever the premise of the article is and be contrary. So,
well, I read some of them about your article and they just seem to play the person and go ad hominem, which is a bit disappointing.
Absolutely, and they don't get any of their facts right either. So there's a lot of untruths in there, which is you just have to wear it, I guess. So interestingly, with Mandy's article, they were all being very positive about Geelong now.
Right.
So because she'd taken one line and said, you know, we really need to have a good hard look at this, they'd all said, oh, stop being so negative. So, and then being mean and personal about her, which I think is really nasty. And yet you said about the Twitterverse saying, yeah, that's really good. They start getting quite negative. Look, to bring the crime conversation and the mental health conversation together was a really good way to highlight, I think, what we all see and what we're all frightened of about Geelong. I think it's also quite a political, it's a very state government political issue. Mm. You know, we need to fund police is what the call would be, and we need to fund pathways and the mental health situation. So I think it's quite politicised, and a lot of that sort of came through as well, and there was quite a bit of criticism about that. The pathways situation, the mental health situation, this isn't new. I think somewhere in something I read, it was claimed that it's been going on for 18 months. Well, I can attest the fact it's been going a lot longer than that. I've been involved with pathways. It's been going on for at least 2 years. And the conversation isn't new, and it has been had with all the relevant people about how it isn't fitting with the NDIA very well at all. So it'll be really interesting to see how that comes out. And it's a very real issue, and it does need resolving.
And what was the contention of the article? Was it that we need to start a discussion? Was it that we need to do more research? What was it?
Well, I think it is just, let's face up to what it is that we have and what the worst side of things are. My answer to that would be, yeah, we need to do research. We need to do proper research, not this sort of tourism-funded nonsense that they talk about research for the purposes of putting a tagline together. That's just not the way to do it. That's a very, I think, very superficial way of trying to articulate what Geelong is all about. Geelong's got so many amazing things going for it. Clearly there's some challenges. Mm. Clearly there's going to be issues when you have a few situations like Target. And the council situation, that's pretty negative. You know, I know that I speak on behalf of the Committee for Geelong sometimes as a member and proud member of that group.
And I'll be in tomorrow, yep.
Yeah, and also G21 and the Chamber. I mean, I'm a member of all of these things now. I was not a member of any of them for a long time, but then I've become a member of all of them, not least because I think there's a lot of value in having a united voice, and that's what the call is for Geelong to speak as one. So I think it's actually really good to be positive, but we've got to be realistic as well. So there's two sides, isn't there, to every story.
So at the moment, do you think the overall narrative is too positive or too negative, or are we somewhere in the middle?
I think it'll be too anything to whoever feels like being critical. Yep. I think, you know, it's a little bit of the 24-hour news cycle will pick up whatever the news of the day is. So, you know, we've had a couple of weeks of pretty bad news, so it doesn't look so good now. Mm. We're in an election situation and that's being used, so they're going to highlight some supposed negatives to try and get some funding. I mean, that's all. The Geelong community is very savvy to political machinations. I mean, we are basically a huge bureaucracy here. There's not many jobs around that aren't public service, which is interesting from a big perspective. You know, there's lots of small business as well, but a lot of it is actually that sort of public service mentality and very funding driven. So that's the conversation that tends to happen, and it's very easy to push it, you know, into a positive versus negative and a hate versus love and all those sorts of things. I think we're pretty typical of any city. You could say exactly the same thing about Melbourne or Perth or Brisbane or anywhere.
So Bendigo, Shepparton.
That's right, yep. Yeah.
Now, a couple of topics briefly. You've got a bit of a follow-up on the female pilot story from a few weeks ago.
Yes, when I was actually talking about that, I was wondering where I'd heard that we couldn't have women flying planes because they might crash them if they had their period. And it was Reg Ansett that said it. That was in an article I saw. There's a female pilot museum proposal going forward, and it was a brief article. And it was Reg Ansett that said that it would be dangerous and inconvenient for women to fly because they're overly emotional and they menstruate. So I thought, oh, I needed to attribute that comment.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, so that was quite interesting. But, of course, that legislation was changed in 1979, I think, and that was when we had the first female pilot fly for Ansett.
Now, Noni Hazelhurst, what's she up to now?
Yes, now, I didn't watch the Logies. I don't know whether you did.
But no, I just heard a lot about it. But I think it's basically an industry patting each other on the back, and I'm not really interested in that.
No, me either. Well, I'm not interested in television per se. So
and I don't watch Waleed Ali, but good on him.
Yeah, good on him, that's right. Well, apparently, I gather, Noni Hazelhurst used her moment at the microphone to make a call for a TV channel that was dedicated to positive stories, and it got quite a bit of interest and a lot of positive support. So, and I thought that was a really interesting premise. I read two articles on the weekend, and I went from sort of a really dark place to a really positive place, and there was one about some 22-year-old being caught for enabling offences in criminal paedophilia on the dark web. So that was really depressing and made me feel really ill. And then I read the article about Noni Hazelhurst and proposing that we have a positive news only or positive stories only TV channel. And I thought that would be fantastic. And Annabelle Crabb had written a beautiful piece on Sunday as well about some really innovative techniques that are being used to save extinct wildlife. And that was really funny and really positive and really quite an engaging conversation that she was having. And I thought, those are the sorts of things we need to have more of. And I think it'd be a lovely idea to have a TV channel that was all about news. You could just put the kids in front of that. Electronic babysitting, guaranteed that it's going to be good.
Whether it would rate, I'm not sure, because they always say that bad news sells.
Well, they say that. I don't believe it. I much prefer reading positive things. And if you happen to have a look at Annabelle Crabb's story from yesterday about the saving of extinct or near extinct species, it's hilarious. It's really funny and it's really good. Things like to deter quolls from cats or make them wary of cats. Somebody's sitting there flicking rubber bands at quolls' noses when there's cats in the vicinity, and just things like that. You think, wow, that's a little bit by bit people are doing amazing things.
And Vic Roads, what's happened there?
Well, that was the registration story, and how to check whether your registration is current or not. And as you said, there's a really, really simple way to do it online. And I hadn't realised, and I had a bit of a panic attack when I read the article, because this particular story was actually a bit of a slap to Aussie Post, because the person had been sent a reminder notice twice, apparently, and she didn't receive it.
Yeah.
And Aussie Post are only compelled to deliver 94% of the mail, interestingly enough.
Is that right?
Yes. So, wow. So that's actually, nobody's at fault there. It was just one of those things that happened, but she got slapped with a $758 fine for having an unregistered vehicle. And I just thought, good reminder, you can just go online, Google Vic Roads, run a number plate, your number plate through there, and it tells you straight away. So that was a really good solution.
And in theory, if you're a passenger about to get into someone's car, you can do the same thing, but I doubt anyone ever does that.
No, and I heard you say that and thought, what a great idea. Yeah, you see, be very careful.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Well, Steph, thank you so much for coming in this morning. Really appreciate it, and we'll catch up next week.
Look forward to it. Always my pleasure. Thanks, Mitchell.
Good on you, Stephanie Asher there.
Mitchell's Front Page with Mitchell Dye. Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11 on 94.7 The Pulse.